rides on coattails.
He's the only one with notes.
Do you think The Rock is doing research when he shows up for Jumanji?
Yes.
No, sir. He shows up, does the little eyebrow thing, smiles pretty, and
millions. I mean, I think The Rock does what he needs to do in the gym ahead of time. And
yeah, that's, like, yep, that's what he's
we're
doing.
We're here for it.
He's
yeah.
putting in the, at least he's putting the effort in the gym.
I'm putting in the effort for what I bring to this podcast. I'm putting in the effort.
You did not
I agree.
Read the article?
That's not what I bring.
I agree. You are putting in all the effort compared representative to what you bring.
Yeah.
I would agree with you.
Exactly. See, there we go. We're all on the same page.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. This is Patrick Nazwoff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarger.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Yes, excellent. Again, we
one
have
one of
not...
these days, she's going to surprise us.
And be successful.
And just, like, drop the news.
She's still here.
Not
and it's
successful.
Going to stop.
What? We're not successful. I will not still be here.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow,
kidding.
I see how it is. Yeah.
Just kidding.
You sell a book, and then she's gone.
No. Yeah.
Into,
no.
The,
yeah.
You know, into the wind.
I'll still be here until I get kicked off.
Okay. One of those two things.
Yes.
You know, we'll see what happens.
Pretty low bar.
That's
yeah. You know, we did not kick Katie off.
Right.
So.
Oh, no. She's self-removed. Yeah.
Self-removed. She is. She.
No one has been kicked off this podcast.
Us.
She abandoned us.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
Like infants without a caretaker.
That's probably. That is.
Did you hear the first couple episodes after Katie
this
left?
Feels
we had
right.
No idea.
Yeah. And you were not in the office. That's a fair analogy.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you.
Yep.
Except my office is leaking right now.
Yeah.
I need Katie to come fix it.
We got the storm moving through today.
Yes.
Tropical Storm Beta is dropping some beta.
Oh, it's a beta storm? Wow.
I don't even know what that means. Is that a joke to something?
It's like, I don't know.
It's like a beta male is coming as what?
A beta male? What are you talking about?
Well, that means you're not an alpha.
Alpha male.
Yeah. I get it. Because
beta would be second in the pack. Omega would be back of the pack. We're doing like...
But does it work that way? I mean, like there's
that's
just...
That's how the Greek alphabet works.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. About the Greek alphabet.
Whomever is coining these terms as insults online was really thinking about the Greek alphabet.
Yeah.
If you're going to use Greek letters, you should be thinking about the Greek alphabet. I feel like that's...
More of an epsilon.
Middle of the pack. I'm just holding my own. Not the best. Not the worst.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Greek letters giving us sororities and fraternities and where you rank as a male.
Everything you ever needed to know.
Right.
We got some news for us.
All right. What do we got?
Oh, but first of all, to give you the teaser of what we're going to be talking about, Christian nationalism. That's what our podcast
That's
is about.
That's a
teaser. There you go. I'm just jumping right into
Somehow
it.
Somehow I expected it to be funnier.
I don't know. Well, I think it's, you know.
Christian nationalism.
Christian nationalism.
Not a joking matter.
We'll probably make some jokes.
We will. That's what we do.
Yeah. I bet we can turn this one around.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right, what do we got for our news?
Well, let me ask you this. Has Corona curtailed any travel plans that you may have had for the last 6 months?
Yes, many.
Many?
Yeah.
Well, at least three.
Yeah, you know, we were supposed to go, youth group was supposed to go to Wyoming. That was
four.
Curtailed by Corona. Any other travel plans you've had?
We were supposed to go home back in May, and that didn't happen. Yeah.
You live here.
Well, back to see family in our ancestral homes. Of the far off land we call Ohio.
So that's a bonus of Corona. You did not have to go to Ohio.
Oh.
I mean, it's sad not to go see your family.
Your family, I love you. Sorry, Patrick apparently
doesn't. Snooty Texan in here.
Just kidding. Oof.
Yeah, Elise, did you not get to go somewhere?
Yeah, it's like three weddings and two vacations at this point, maybe a third. So.
Did the wedding still happen, or did they all get postponed? Or
so
they just called it off to like, hey, if we can't get married on this date, we're out.
Like, right, yeah. So all three of them are happening. Two of them are reduced, and one of them is in Miami. And
so this is like we're married like half time? Or like reduced wedding.
We were talking about that in the podcast in a few weeks.
Right. Part-time wedding.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah. So two of them were reduced, like guest list. One of them's in Miami.
Did you make the cut?
I did for the Miami one.
Okay.
Are you going?
I am not. Because
it's Miami.
Of the exposure and all that.
Bienvenido a Miami.
Yes. Mm. Well.
It's the Will Smith song.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to Miami. Bienvenido a Miami.
We can't say anymore. Will Smith is going
to. I mean, dear Mr. Smith, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah.
You did credit him, though.
Longtime friend of the podcast, Will Smith. Uh-huh. Not that Will Smith, a different Will Smith.
Yeah. guy went to college with. Well, people have been sad that they haven't been able to travel.
Sure.
A lot of vacations canceled. Mm. In the United States now, you can't fly overseas, or it's pretty hard to fly overseas. Yeah. You know, maybe you probably could, especially if you are rich.
Right. There's always a way.
There's always a way. Yeah.
When there's a will.
Yeah.
But a lot of countries don't want us to come there right now.
Yeah. I'm not sure they wanted us to come before Corona, so.
That's up for debate. But
well,
Qantas, they were willing to take our money.
Qantas Airlines out of Australia.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Has anything. They have offered a 7-hour flight
to nowhere.
To nowhere. Elise likes to spoil my stories. She likes just coming there. You know, I've got my cadence down, how I want to do this. That's right. I just sneaks
I'm
on
up
it.
On the news.
Yeah, at least, well, Elise is coming prepared, so.
Yeah, that's right.
A 7-hour flight.
This is why coming in unprepared.
To nowhere. So this flight will leave the airport, fly for 7 hours.
In circles?
Land back at the same airport.
Wow.
Sounds like misery to me. But.
Well, yeah, what's the appeal of this?
You're in the airport. Yeah, that's
you
the
get
thing.
To pretend like you're
never
traveling.
Never in my life have I thought to myself, you know what I want to do today?
Go on a flight to nowhere.
Fly around a 737 with 150 mm-hmm. other people.
It is a sightseeing flight. They are going to fly by like the Opera House to Bondi Beach. I don't know what that means. But,
probably
you know,
a nice beach. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. You know, the Gold Coast, New mm-hmm. South Wales. These are all Australian things. So, I mean, who cares? But like,
those all sound beautiful. Yeah. Mr. Judgy Texan over here.
I've been to the real beach.
Yeah.
Galveston. Just kidding. That's gross.
Poor Patrick.
I know, yeah.
Poor Patrick.
Deeply sad right now.
I have traveled. I've been to real beaches. All right. This does sound interesting to you? Would you be signing up for a 7-hour flight to nowhere?
I would say a 7-hour sightseeing flight around Australia sounds intriguing, but not packed into a plane with a whole bunch of other people that could have corona.
On a flight here that you've flown, like, is sightseeing really a part of your flight experience? It's not for me. It's
no.
To stare out the window.
But that's not they're not flying with that purpose. They're flying and take you in a straight line from A to B. If they were flying with oh, now we're going to fly around the Golden Gate Bridge. Like, that'd be cool. I don't know.
I'm not sure it would be.
Yeah. The plane food is not great either.
Are they serving food? Maybe Qantas has better food than...
the Australian foods?
Yeah.
I don't know any Australian dishes. Probably weird stuff. They have like a bunch of weird animals.
Kangaroo? Mm. Can you eat kangaroo?
Oh, I'm kangaroo sure you could. Is delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. We have it from the horse's mouth.
There
kangaroo
you
is delicious.
Horse's mouth?
Yeah, wow.
That was not meant to be an insult. Isn't that like an expression?
Ohio manners right there.
Yeah. Is that a thing where, like, you know, someone who has done it themselves is from the horse's mouth? That's...
Sure. You keep telling yourself that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Elise. Well,
don't worry. This flight sold out within 10 minutes.
There you go. How many people are on the flight?
Let's see. I do have that information here. 134 tickets went on sale, ranging in U.S. prices. They have Australian prices, but I don't understand those.
Right.
U.S. prices, $566. To $2,734.
I would not pay that much.
For a 7-hour flight to nowhere.
I would not pay that much.
Sold out. But don't worry. Special entertainment is promised too, including a surprise celebrity host.
Ooh, come on, Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Right.
I assume it's probably an Australian celebrity.
Come on.
Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'll take Chris
Hemsworth.
It's
definitely not Chris Hemsworth. It's maybe the guy who played Crocodile Dundee. It might be that guy.
Yeah.
It might be Bindi Irwin's cousin. Yeah, you know, I think Bindi Irwin is too famous to be on this flight.
Yeah.
She's got a brother. Maybe it's him.
135 people on what kind of plane did it say?
A Boeing 787.
Oh,
Dreamliner aircraft.
Okay, so that plane holds way more than that number.
Yeah,
so
that must
still
be 50% capacity. This or
distance is one, insane that they would think of this, and two, that 134 people said,
yes,
yeah.
Please.
It is
yeah.
not
I'm
at
in.
All insane that they would think of this.
I think it's
it is insane
nuts
that 134
so.
People bought it out.
Yeah.
Like that's, but like for an airline, like, hey, how are we going to make money? Well,
yeah.
We got planes. Let's
yeah.
fly people around. What
how
else are they going
to
think
rip
of?
The people off today. Fly to nowhere.
How can
good.
The airline not think of this flight?
Yeah.
I don't get why 134 people, but Qantas is not the first airline to do this. It's flying the footsteps. Air Taiwan also
sure.
had a flight to nowhere on their Hello Kitty themed dream jet.
There it is.
That's,
I love it.
That's more fun already.
Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Japanese airline Al Nippon. I don't know how you pronounce that. That sounds
that's
right.
Good. Yeah.
Had a 1.5-hour flight, so it's a little shorter, but it was to replicate the Hawaiian resort experience.
What?
On the flight?
On the flight. Cool. 1.5 hours. Just get a quick Hawaiian
like a
experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are they doing? Yeah. They throw a lei on you.
Right.
They have a pig burning in the middle
sure.
of the plane.
Somebody does a hula in the middle of the aisle, and you call it a day.
And then you pay $34 for a cheeseburger, and then you're like, I'm good.
Yeah. You're all set.
Yeah, so there you go. What do you think? Are you any interest here? A Houston flight to nowhere? A Lord Life sponsored? We can get the
congregation together.
Or Beyond Sunday, get on the flight. Yes. We will be your celebrity hosts.
Live podcast on a flight to nowhere of Beyond Sunday. I like where we're going with this.
Yeah.
Step one, going to need some financial backers to make this happen.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that.
We have an offering plate, so.
Right.
That's fine.
Yeah, we can start a GoFundMe here. Yeah, GoFundMe, Beyond Sunday Flight to Nowhere.
What would be the sites that we would want to see? If we did,
coming out of Houston?
Coming out of Houston, four-hour flight. What do you think we would want to see?
Mm, we can scratch Ohio off the list.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're going to be able to make it to there. Right? Yeah, so it's got to be the south area.
I mean, I figure this. It's a 2.5-hour flight to Cincinnati. So 2 hours each way gets you somewhere to, I don't know, Missouri, probably, in that direction. Maybe to college. Maybe you could see the Rocky Mountains and get back in four.
Yeah, I could say maybe you could do buzz over Big Bend.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah, it's a lot of desert that you're flying over, though. There's not a lot between here and there, but I think Big Bend. And maybe you could swing back the other way and like, oh, there's New Orleans, and just come on back in.
And maybe just do like some super low flying over the ocean where you're like 100 feet above the water.
That'd be awesome. That'd be cool. I'd be down with that.
Scary, the horror flight to nowhere. Hosted by Beyond Sunday. What is that, like, that conservative, like, hell experience or whatever?
The conservative hell experience.
No, it's like a haunted house thing that conservative churches put
on. So instead of a haunted house,
it's like going to
here's
hell.
Here's what hell would be like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the flight for you?
We could have a hell flight.
No, we're not going to have a hell flight. Flying over the water at 100 feet is not hell.
A 7-hour flight to nowhere already sounds pretty close. with Bingy Irwin's brother. Giving you animal facts the whole time.
Or like just bringing out the tarantulas.
Yes, yes.
Like, oh my gosh. Oh,
I lost one. Yes.
Snakes on a plane. Yes. Here we go in real life. There you go. Right. Flight to Nowhere.
There we go.
All right, let's talk about Christian nationalism.
Let's do it.
Okay, so our main article here is going to be from Relevant Magazine. I lost it for a second.
That's okay.
Relevant Magazine. It's a Christian online periodical. I don't know if they do real magazine
they
anymore.
They used to.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody's doing real magazines anymore.
That's a fair question.
Yeah, probably not many. So they would
I think Time still has one.
Yeah, probably.
They're holding on in that grocery store checkout lane.
Yeah, let's see. Who do we see? Oh, we don't see anybody in the grocery store checkout lane. What happens to those? Like, if everybody's doing curbside pickup, you can't, like, get the gum and the magazines.
Maybe
the
they need to have, like, somebody come out with, like, the little
with
tray
the cart next to your window. I'm thinking, And then they need to make you, like, stand there with the cart next to your window for, like, 5 to 10 minutes before they actually bring your groceries
through. Yeah, I can see this. I like this. Yeah. Okay.
All right. HEB, you're welcome. That's our Beyond Sunday's gift to you.
The rise of Christian nationalism. So I'll start this off with their story here, and we'll explore from there. So, in July of 2019, lawmakers in South Dakota passed a new law requiring all public schools to display the national motto, "In God We Trust," in a prominent location.
Okay.
Republican State Senator Phil Jensen said, "Let's keep hope alive. This is our legacy, our legislature, our history, and a nation that trusts God."
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is how they're starting this thing. You know, their example here of some Christian nationalism. So maybe first we should define it. What is Christian nationalism?
So I can only kind of define it from my own experience. I don't have like a technical definition.
Okay, sure.
But I would say that Christian nationalism is when your identity as a good citizen of the country is wrapped up in being a good, faithful member of a particular religion. And so in order to be a good citizen of the country, you have to be a good member of this country and
vice versa.
Yeah.
And so and specifically Christian, you know, this there could be, you know, and maybe in the Middle East, you might have Islamic nationalism.
Sure.
You know, in India, it might be Hindu nationalism.
Right.
You know, those things could be. So your civic life and your faith life are connected, you know, are intertwined with one another.
Right.
All right, yeah, so I think that, so if that is how you are, it would make sense that you'd want your faith life and your civic life, putting your students in school, to be connected.
Absolutely.
Now, I think that that's wrong, but like that would make sense for you to get there, at the very least. So Phil Jensen, I think, does make sense. Again, I think he's wrong, though.
Wrong, okay.
Yeah, maybe, but we'll get it.
Which one was Phil? Phil's the author?
Phil's the Republican state senator who passed that law, who sponsored that bill.
Okay.
So let's briefly, you know, the United States, mm-hmm. it's probably we're seeing kind of a rise or maybe a calling out more mm-hmm. of Christian nationalism, not just from atheists, but also probably from fellow believers, fellow Christians mm-hmm, mm-hmm, are mm-hmm. coming out against this Christian nationalism. And so we're, I think also, as we talked about last week in a culture war, as Christians are seeing their place at the table a little diminished, mm-hmm. maybe they're latching on to the politics and procedures of our nation to kind of make sure that their place at the table stays as big as possible for as long as possible.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of this. But this is not a uniquely United States experience,
no,
and not a uniquely
sure.
modern experience.
No.
This is something that could be existing here in the country for a long, long time, and prior to the United States even
Absolutely.
Existing
yeah.
for a long, long time. So do you have any examples of like how this started?
Yeah, so if we go way back, right, think of the first followers of Jesus. It was a sect of Judaism and was treated as such, right? They were mm-hmm. just seen as, you know, kind of an irritating part of Judaism. Mm. And then as that Christianity starts to define itself from Judaism, we have two issues. One, the Jewish culture said, well, we don't want them to identify as part of us because the Romans are seeing them as subversive. And so we don't want Rome's power to come down on us. So they're not Jewish. And Rome says, well, they're not paying attention to our deities. They're not acknowledging our authority, our gods. So they're not Roman, and so what are they? And so Christians come in this kind of middle sect. And so for 150, 200 years, it's kind of this underground movement, right? Where it's dangerous to be a Christian. You're literally putting your life on the line. You could be arrested for it. Many were executed for not denying the faith in Jesus Christ and in acknowledging the authority mm-hmm. of the emperor. And then eventually, all these wars happen because, you know, an emperor dies and somebody else comes up and there's a power struggle, mm-hmm. just like in Gladiator and all those other great movies at the time. And eventually, this guy Constantine comes along, and he's trying to take power, and he is about to go into a really big battle, and right before the battle has a vision in which, this legend goes, Jesus told him to put his symbol on their shields, mm-hmm. and so there's a cross, and so he does that, and they win the battle, and so then, as the legend is told, Constantine says, great, we're all going to be Christian now, mm-hmm. and so in basically overnight, the Roman Empire goes from being polytheistic and Christianity being an outlawed underground movement to Christianity is the religion of the state. And to be a good Roman citizen, you have to be a good Christian. And to be a good Christian, you have to be a good Roman citizen. And you have to you still have to acknowledge the authority of the emperor. Only now they acknowledge the emperor is under God, quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. So you still have to acknowledge the authority of the emperor. You still have to pay your taxes and do all those things, because that's what good Christians do, is that you acknowledge the good authority of the Roman Empire. And then that kind of moves as empirical structures move, that sense of nationalism moves as well. Mm-hmm. So eventually you have, well, to be a good German, you have to be a good Lutheran or a good Protestant, right? You mm-hmm. can't be a Catholic. Eventually you have to be a good English person. I don't know what the...
I think they work, yeah.
Yeah. To be an English citizen, you have to be a faithful member of the Church of England, right? No more Catholics. And then for a while, Catholic again, and then no more Catholics again. That went mm-hmm. back and forth a couple of times. And the same thing has happened in the United States, right? You know, we came here and we said, okay, we're going to be free of all that religious oppression. But ultimately, we still said, hey, to be a good American citizen, we really still expect you to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. And so we went out to native tribes and said, yeah, you all need to become Christians, and mm-hmm. we're going to force you to do that. And we told people of other religions that they weren't welcome, or that you couldn't have these jobs, or you couldn't work in this place, or you couldn't live in this area. In fact, you know, the college that I went to in high school was in a suburb of Columbus that was originally founded by a Jewish group of people who were told they weren't allowed to live in the city limits of Columbus.
Yikes.
And so they settled in this little city, which is now, you know, part of the city itself, but that's
yeah.
how it came up. So all of this has its roots in this first move that Constantine says, hey, guess what, Christianity, you're now part of the state, you're mm-hmm. now part of this. And so even though we have this quote-unquote separation of church and state in the United States, this faith and a sense of patriotism have become very interwoven and intertangled. And, you know, there are good things about it. I think, you know, I think governments are wise to acknowledge God's authority and to be seeking God's wisdom as they look for ways to care for the people over which they are mm-hmm. stewards, I guess would be the way to think of that. But it becomes very dangerous very quick. You know, when we think America is God's righteous arm to deal out justice or to deal out the law or however, you know, and it becomes dangerous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a mixing of
things.
There you go. I think that gives us a good background on kind of how we got here.
And you say I don't come prepared.
Just 17, just the last 1700 years, real quick. Just boom.
Just like that.
That's it. That's the podcast.
Have a nice day.
We're going to keep going.
So if you liked what you heard today. Oh, no, we're not ready for that. Okay.
Yeah, so we see this in America, and we see this some ways that we would say are small and some ways that we say are big. And we see this from both sides of the same coin, from churches kind of marrying their faith with politics and some politicians marrying their political influence with faith. So we kind of address that, you know, and so this could look like a church putting the American flag in the sanctuary. And so, and that has roots in World War II, especially in Lutheran churches. We wanted to make sure, hey, we're not with those Germans.
That's right.
Let's bring that American flag in here.
In fact, until World War II, a lot of Lutheran churches in the United States still worshipped in German. And it was during, it was in the early 1900s and during World War II when they said, we should stop doing that. We all want to be clear. We're good Americans, so we're going to start worshiping in English now.
And not to say other, I could be putting "In God We Trust" on our dollar bills.
Sure.
Could be kind of claiming our Second Amendment rights is a God-given right. The right to bear arms.
Any other of the rights in the Bill of Rights is a God-given right. I mean, that's...
Sure.
All of those are rights given by the government. None of them are rights given by God.
Yeah. I think that one is definitely like, it's not really even, you know, I don't think you can even make a biblical case for it.
No, okay. I see what you're saying.
You know, so, but so I think, so even to say like, if you lived in a different country where that was not a right of that nation, I don't think you can make a Christian case, I should own a gun.
I get you. Right. I got you.
So yeah, and you know, I think it's an understanding, okay, Christians have just as much right as everybody else to advocate for favorable laws.
Absolutely.
To support the church, Christian faith, how we express our faith in the public arena. This is just what everybody else is doing. Christians are just doing it too. And I think this is kind of the subtle ways we see this. And I'm not going to even say necessarily any one of those things is completely egregious. I disagree with all of them, but I don't think any of them are, wow, we really need to address this as like a church community, like that this is happening. But I think those are the subtle ways, but there can become, those subtle ways lead to more egregious ways. So, according to Pew, which is a research place. They don't just do religious research; they do all kinds. They do polling research. They're a researcher.
Patrick has to clarify that because this morning I admitted that up until like 5 years ago, I thought that they were just religious because I thought Pew was like, oh, we're polling the people that sit in the pews. Like I thought it was like a religious thing. It's not. That's not what it is.
Okay. In 2017, nearly a third of Americans say that being a Christian is a key part of being an American.
Yikes.
And I think this is where it gets kind of troubling because although we have Christianity is the dominant religion or the biggest religion in our land, I don't think that it is the case of like those two things need to or should be or need to be intertwined with one another.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when we read something like the Constitution, Bill of Rights, etc., it seems pretty clear that while there were Judeo-Christian values that might have been instilled in some of those documents, the intention was always that people would be able to worship freely and that to be a good American, you would not have to be a member of a particular religious faith community. We have not lived that out in practice always very effectively in the years since then, but that seems to me to be the intention. That our salvation is not found through being a good American citizen. Our salvation is found through Jesus Christ alone, and that has nothing to do with my citizenship in this earth, period. Yeah. It didn't matter if I was a citizen of Rome or not, a citizen of Germany or not, a citizen of England or not, a citizen of the United States or not. My salvation is found in Jesus Christ alone. Period.
Yeah.
End of story.
So that's kind of, I think this kind of opens up to kind of this idea of like, where are we now? You know, where what's happening in our world right now, especially as this tying of Christian values and American values and saying, well, these things are one and the same or connected. Do you see that anywhere else? You know, I kind of give some simpler things, but have you seen any other places where you see those ties kind of come together?
Between like American values and Christian values?
Yeah, like when people are trying to string those two things together.
Yes. Yeah. I think that sort of the Republican takeover of the evangelical church is a huge example of that. You know, basically they're in bed with each other for better or for worse, depending on what you think about that, but it right. is the case, you yeah. know?
I mean, we were talking this morning, and I think, Patrick, you mentioned at the Republican National Convention that Vice President Mike Pence quoted Hebrews, right?
He did, yeah,
or,
I have that.
Or misquoted Hebrews. Okay, so we're going to get that.
Oh, misquoted Hebrews.
Well, excellent. Quoted Hebrews with the implication that was not maybe helpful. So while you're looking that up, I'll pull something else. But I think, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance is one where I did not struggle with it as a kid, right? Because mm-hmm. I didn't know any different. You get up every week and you say the Pledge of Allegiance. Sure. I think we did it once a week or something like yeah. that. And, you know, you say Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and one nation under God, and then you go on with your day. But there is an element of that where, as I have gotten older and as I've, you know, really thought about Scripture and thought about God's call in my life, I'm like, wait a second. Should I, as a Christian, be pledging allegiance to any state? Sure. Like, is that a Christian response? Or am I called, you know, I'm reading Revelation for a class that I'm leading right now. And over in Revelation, the clear indication is, hey, if you're giving your allegiance to anything other than God, you're in the wrong.
Yeah.
It, you know, the only way to be faithful to God is to give God full devotion in everything all the time. I mean, that's the story of Revelation, which is not to say it's the end all be all, but it's there. And that's something mm-hmm. that we should be considering. You know, am I dishonoring God or diminishing my faith by acknowledging and by pledging allegiance to some other worldly, earthly body?
Yeah, I totally hear you. And I can say, even if I disagree with a lot of elements of Christian nationalism, it's part of kind of being an American. I yeah. think, you know, sometimes I have to ask myself the question, who would I have more in common with, a Christian from Africa or my atheist neighbor who's also an American? How come the Christianity does not supersede that life experience in America? Yeah. How come that would not be more important yeah. to the bond?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, and I can say it's probably not. Like for me right. and maybe for many of us, it's just really not. And so that's part of that blending that I think I'm unconsciously doing,
yeah.
even or even trying to say I'm not doing, and I'm still having yeah. to have those things happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
We even had in my college, our alma mater was, you know, we were a Lutheran college, but our alma mater was weirdly kind of idolatrous. And so we had religion professors who wouldn't sing the alma mater. Like they'd stand and they'd, you know, be polite whenever we're supposed to sing, but they wouldn't sing it because it yeah. was like, you know, a capital to thee, we pledge devotion to thee, and every heart we build a shrine until yeah. you shine from ocean to something ocean. I don't know. Like it was, and they're like, no, that's God. Like we're not going to. And so we do it without even realizing it on a lot of different scales. And I think we do that in a big way nationally mm-hmm. also.
Yeah. So the Republican National Convention, Vice President Mike Pence spoke, and he paraphrased Hebrews 12, which is fine. It's totally fine to sure. paraphrase Hebrews yeah. 12. And so the verse reads.
Not the part of Hebrews I would paraphrase, but you know, that's just, I'm just kidding.
I think
Hebrews 12 is fine.
I like Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. And I'm going to read that here. Okay. Therefore, since we are sound.
This is what he said, or you're actually reading?
This is what okay. Hebrews 1 and 2 says.
Just want to be clear.
Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God.
That's the verse that you read when people die, like at their funerals.
Sometimes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly one that we talk about on All Saints Day every year when we think about all the saints who've come before us. It's a beautiful verse,
yes. right?
And I love that it, you know, you fix your eyes on Jesus. Like that's the yeah. only thing that matters. You run the race, and the only thing that's going to get you through it is fixing your eyes on Jesus. But you're also encouraged by all those people who've come before you.
Yeah. I dislike the insinuation that the way to do that is by voting Republican.
That's what the verse says.
That's
he did not read that verse.
Didn't read that.
No,
okay.
No.
Sure.
And that's fine. If the president or vice president or any politician wants to read from the Bible, I think that's fine. Like
yeah.
that's great.
Yeah.
You know, again. But this is what he said instead. So he was alluding to I assume he was alluding to this verse.
Okay.
So he said, so let's run the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Old Glory and all she represents. Let's fix our eyes on this land of heroes and let their courage inspire. And later on, he said, let's fix our eyes on the author and perfecter of our faith and freedom and never forget where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. So he does get to kind of pointing to Jesus, but for me, I clearly say that he's referencing
yeah.
Hebrews 12. He references again later in the speech, mm-hmm. but we're not fixing our eyes on Jesus.
It's
we're fixing
glory.
Our eyes on Old Glory.
Swap it
now,
up.
It's been a while since I've read all of the names of Jesus that are offered in like Isaiah and other places. Is Old Glory in there? Is that one? Yeah.
You shall call him Prince of Peace.
Right.
Wonderful Counselor.
Old Glory.
Old Glory, right? Old Glory. Yes.
Don't tread on me.
We sing that in Handel's Messiah. Okay.
Yeah, the camp I worked at.
You shall call him Don't Tread on Me.
Yeah, the camp I worked at, all our cabins were named after like names of Jesus. We had the Way, the Truth, the Life, Suffering Servant, Wonderful Counselor, the Rock, the Anchor.
Rock. Yeah. Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Dwayne the Rock Johnson. Yeah, it's just, Old Glory did not make the list. It was not one of our cabins. Sure. But maybe they built some more since then.
Right.
That is weird.
Yeah.
I think this is a clear example of what inspires us to fix our eyes on. And he's speaking, and I think Mike Pence is a known Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I would even say I believe him. I think when he says he's a follower of Jesus, I believe it. I disagree with him on many, many ways that he tries to follow Jesus. But I trust that his faith is sincere.
Sure.
But to replace in this illusion or this allegory, let's fix our eyes on Jesus. Let's fix our eyes on Old Glory.
Mm-hmm. Which is the flag.
That's the flag. That's he looked at the flag too, but he said this. Okay. He paused and looked at the flag. That
just in case you didn't get it.
Right.
Glory. The movie with Denzel Washington?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
That's a good movie.
It's a good movie.
That is, I think, for me, that's an egregious example of Christian nationalism.
Well, and so he might even agree that it is.
Yes.
I think the disagreement would be on whether or not that's a good thing. I think everybody can look at that and say, Christianity and nationalism have clearly mixed in this. Like, they are no longer one or two different things. They are one and the same. And so the question then becomes, is that good for your Christian faith? I'm not even really that concerned of whether or not it's good for the United States. Is that good for Christianity? And that's where my take is that Jesus's movement that Jesus started, this is why we go pre-Constantine, right? Jesus's movement that he started was not an overtly political movement that sought to have political power. Mm-hmm. It had political implications, to be sure.
Sure.
But Jesus did not seek political office. Jesus did not tell his disciples to go out and, you know, overthrow the Roman Empire or to go out and, you know, take over the nation of Israel and start their own kingdom, right? He told them to live this way, and in so doing, it would have a subversive effect on the culture that they were living in. And this, to me, saying, hey, what we fix our eyes on is the Old Glory. We fix our eyes on the state, and in doing so, then we're also fixing our eyes on God is essentially the implication there. By fixing your eyes on the United States, you're fixing your eyes on God. That does not ring true to what I see Jesus teaching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it from a patriotic standpoint, wanting to, like, rally people or whatever. Sure. But I think as a Christian, the thing that disturbs me about this is that as a Christian or as Christians, we have a burden to or an implicit burden to make things better for other people and people that are not like us and the disenfranchised. And I don't feel like Christian nationalism does that. I think tying back into last week, it's more of a defense of our turf than it is fighting to make things better for other people. Also, I think it is frighteningly easy to oppress people in the name of a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and I don't want to criticize Vice President Pence for talking about the flag.
No.
I think he should.
Sure. Yep.
He's an American politician.
Talk about the flag.
He should speak about American ideals. And
he can talk about his faith.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with either of those things.
Right.
I think this mixing of the metaphors, if we're not acknowledging it, is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because I think it also leads into, and then after that, you know, the President Trump was saying, well, the Democrats didn't even have God mentioned at their conventions, which is also not true.
Right.
But it's saying, like, we're the Christians.
Right.
They're not the Christians. This is what it's supposed to imply.
Yes. Right.
Or not even imply, what it's saying.
Right.
So Christian nationalism, I'll tell you this. The Christian nationalists may describe themselves as dominionists. This would be a Baptist mentality or term or evangelical one who believe Christians ought to have dominion over what they consider their seven forces. So this would be the culture, business, that all these things shape culture. So business, government, media, arts, entertainment, education, family, and religion. Arts and entertainment are one.
So seven.
Yes.
Good, because seven's a perfect number, so that makes sense.
Right, yeah.
And so this is saying not only should your Christian faith be involved in any of these things, it should have dominion over these things.
My Christian faith should have dominion over those for myself or for other people?
Well, I mean, if you're having dominion over yourself, over the arts, that would intentionally be for other people. You're not creating art for yourself.
I can have dominion over the arts that I consume.
Sure.
I doubt that's what that's referencing. But that's nice of you.
I don't have a problem with... I think our Christian faith should... Or should,
we should
have,
dictate what
I don't
you
know.
Do.
I don't like the word dominion. We can think about that. Yeah. But, you know, our Christian faith should impact how I engage in all of those
things. I 100%... If you enter the business world, you should be... You're a Christian in the business world.
Yes.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
But, I don't know how...
But,
yeah. I don't know what they're trying to draw from
I can
that.
Use my faith in the business world to shape and mold others around me, which, again, I agree with. It's just kind of this idea, this marrying of America and faith and how those two intertwine with one another, I think is where we're really going to get some issues here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you could be a business. I mean, we know businesses who do this. I'm thinking Chick-fil-A. I'm thinking Hobby Lobby, right? Things like that, where they make intentional stands of we're going to be closed on Sunday because we are our leadership, our ownership, our people of Christian faith, and we are going to close on Sunday. Right? I mean, you can be a business person and make decisions based on your faith that you know are going to cost you money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I don't know how many millions of dollars Chick-fil-A could make if they were just open on Sunday.
Yes.
You know, open for one Sunday, Chick-fil-A. Just try it for one Sunday. You might like it.
Because you always want Chick-fil-A on Sunday.
Right. Everybody wants Chick-fil-A on Sunday. You never want Chick-fil-A until you think to yourself, oh, it's Sunday, they're closed.
There's actually some really great marketing case studies about this, how Chick-fil-A sales are actually higher because they're closed on Sunday because everybody wants it on Sunday, so they go buy it on Monday.
See, that's just Jesus rewarding faithfulness.
Is it though?
So I agree. I don't think that would be the problem. Right. I do think what would be the problem is like a city council saying, because of my faith, your business should be closed on Sunday.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Which also happened in the United States, right? I mean, we had blue laws for decades.
And still can.
In some places, still do. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, where you can or when you can and can't buy alcohol
mm-hmm.
based on a Christian calendar of Sunday being the Lord's Day. It's still around here. I don't know. Is that everywhere?
Yeah.
It was a thing in South Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're actually maybe more strict in South Carolina at this point.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because here you can buy beer afternoon, right?
Yeah. Beer and wine, but liquor stores are closed,
right.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In South Carolina, I don't think you can buy it at all on Sunday.
Get all your liquor purchasing needs right here at Beyond Sunday. We got you covered.
If you have any questions, email us.
Sorry, that was a weird rabbit hole, which is all to say we've done this.
Yeah.
In the history of the United States, in the recent history of the United States, we continue to do this. We continue to assume that Christian values should be the things that govern everyone's behavior, which is not to say that there aren't values that Christianity has that would be good to institute.
Absolutely.
But to assume that this is the only way to come at a government operation, we do not live in a theocracy.
Right.
You know, theocratic governments exist in the Middle East where they have religious leaders as the political leaders, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that is not the form of government that we have in the United States. Mm-hmm. If we want that, then let's just own it and say, but if we're going to pretend like we're in a land that says, hey, we have a freedom of religion, we have a separation between church and state, then we have to own that. And we have to say, we have to wrestle with what that means.
And I think it's one thing to say like, hey, because of my faith and how I read my Bible, I read my Bible, I want that to influence my public sphere, even if it's like, you know, quote unquote, bad for the non-believers. This is, I truly believe what Jesus has to say in scriptures is better than they even know for themselves.
Sure.
But I think for people who engage in Christian nationalism, it's a very selective reading of their scriptures and how they put those things into place, because it's not Christianity put up there, it's Christian nationalism.
Right.
It's not only is this good for the church Christianity, this also is good for this American ideal that's snaking its way, and then there are this capitalistic ideal that's snaking its way on in there, that's not always necessarily the Christian values that we want to say. So we can say, hey, because of my Christian beliefs, prohibition became a thing, we did those things, but we really see, like, because of my Christian beliefs from the same group of people say, this is how I feel about immigration and the refugee plight that the Bible clearly says. I cannot understand how you can walk away from Scripture without it hearing Jesus and God are for refugees and immigrants.
Yeah.
Or because I believe in my Christian values, you know, we're going to make sure in God we trust is in our schools, so our kids know our prayers in school, so we kids know how to pray and these things. But, you know, having health care or these other things that Jesus seems to be for. You know, like, again, like, I think you can make this argument in Acts, how the early church was operating, that we're kind of doing these things.
They were certainly healing people.
Yeah, like, they were not putting that out there as well, because it's not just about kind of a Christian value, it's kind of a one-sided value.
Right.
And it's hidden, or it's more palatable for, I think, the masses by disguising itself as a Christian value. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's easier to swallow when we say, this is how the Bible sounds.
Well, and it's possible to do that because the two have been mixed, right?
Yeah.
Because it is safe to be a Christian in the United States, because it's expected through the, you know, history of the United States to be a Christian in the United States. You know, once upon a time, you know, the question if you moved into a new neighborhood wasn't, well, are my neighbors Christian or not? The question was, well, are they Methodist, Episcopalian, or Lutheran, or Catholic, right? Mm-hmm. And if they were Catholics, they probably lived in a particular neighborhood, because Catholics gave authority to the Pope, and, well, we don't like that in the United States.
Sure.
So what was it? Kennedy was the first Catholic Pope? I mean, or Catholic president?
Right.
Correct.
You know, so, and that was a big deal when that happened, mm-hmm. because people are like, well, is he going to answer to the Pope? If the Pope calls up President Kennedy and says, hey, you have to do this to be a good Catholic, is he going to do it? Like, that was a big concern of how those would influence one another. And so the question used to be, well, which kind of Christian are you? And now you move into a neighborhood and that's not the same question we ask. And so there's fear that takes hold of there. There's defensiveness, as Elise has pointed out to us, that we want to kind of rehold what was comfortable and what gave us a sense of protection and a sense of power and control to some extent. And it just all of it to say, like, that's not how the first followers of Jesus lived.
Yeah.
Well, the first follower of Jesus lived in fear for their lives.
Yeah. Well, I think it's sort of human nature to, when you believe something, to take it and want to apply it to other people externally from yourself. And so you take something that is a good thing, that is good news, and then when you flip that outwards and project it, it becomes a means of control, you know, more than anything.
Yeah. So the future, where do we go from here? That's a good question, right? So this article...
It's 2020. We really can only go up,
I'm
right?
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to know.
You'll be surprised.
Have we bottomed out yet?
there's a long way.
They say in like AA and stuff like that you have to hit rock bottom before you really seek to turn around. Have we done that yet?
I'm not sure.
Oh man,
I mean, got a couple more.
People are getting on airplanes and flying to nowhere.
Yeah.
We've got to be close.
Right. Yeah.
They're paying thousands of dollars to sit on an airplane. For 7 hours.
It's like how you monitor the apex predators check the health of the ecosystem.
Nowhere.
People are flying nowhere.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah. Amanda Tyler here has a quote from 2019. She and the rest of the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty launched a group called Christians Against Christian Nationalism. Condemns Christian nationalism as a persistent threat to our religious communities and our democracies. They wrote, as Christians, we are bound to Christ, not by citizenship, but by faith. And I think that this...
I'm pro.
Yeah, me too. That this is really saying, like, if you are a Christian, you're that first and before you are an American. And that means you don't become a Christian when you're born in America. You know?
Yeah.
And you're not a Christian when you're born outside of America.
Right.
And your connection to Christians worldwide, I think, should be stronger than your connections just to American citizenships.
Because
that's what lasts.
Yeah.
You will not be an American in heaven. That's just the way it is.
Them's is fighting words.
Come on, man. Yeah. All right, fine.
Every tribe is called under Jesus.
Sure. And for the record, I don't care.
Yeah. I'm ready to fight. You know, but here we go. And this article also concludes here at the very end, a quote from Bishop Elizabeth Eaton, our bishop here in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. Christian nationalism is not the same thing as patriotism or being patriotic, she explains.
Agreed.
I am a patriot. We can be patriotic and still understand that we don't need to minimize our religious convictions or somehow make those fit into a particular political affiliation or nationalistic affiliations.
Yeah.
So this is... I think this gets into the, well, you can't be Christian and a Democrat. And I think from the other side, well, you can't be Christian and vote for Donald Trump.
Right.
You know, like, these are the things that we can say, like, that
neither of those are true.
Neither of those things are true, because we're saying your American citizenship would supersede, or your American political idea supersedes your religious ideals.
Mm.
And I...
No, it's true because your religious ideals should supersede your American...
I said it's not true because of that.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. heard that backwards. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah. And so part of this is, are you familiar with Tony Campolo? He's a Christian speaker and writer. Yeah, I think he used to be popular, 15 years ago or so. Or more popular.
He kind of had a falling out with a scandal of some sort, didn't he?
Right. I don't think so. But I think he's just got older, he has this quote that I do like that I think is funny. He says, mixing Christianity and politics is a lot like mixing ice cream and dog poop. You ruin the one without doing much to affect the other.
You ruin the dog poop, right? I think that's a helpful quote. I think that's
And this again, I think all Christians should vote. I think you should all be engaged in the public lifestyle and your civic duties. But to say, like, because of my Christian values, I want my teachers in private in public schools leading my kids in prayer. I think you got to be careful what you wish for there.
Or to say, if you don't want someone to live or to pray, if someone doesn't want their kids to pray in school, to say that makes them un-American.
Yes.
Is like, that's also like, that does not, your citizenship is not defined by whether or not you want someone to pray in school.
I can
want the best for my country and the best for the people in my neighborhood without acknowledging God. And I can acknowledge God without wanting what's best for the people in my neighborhood or my country, right? Like, both of those are independent of one another.
Absolutely.
All right. All right.
Anybody else got anything? Sorry.
No, you're good.
Yes.
I'm good.
All right.
Go ahead.
Well, for the third time today.
Who's in charge? If you,
I'm in charge. If you liked what you heard today, we hope that you'll take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes or wherever it is that you are listening to this podcast. It really does help us out and help us get the word out about Beyond Sunday so that when you ask your favorite smart speaker to play Beyond Sunday, the right one comes up, because apparently we're not the only one out there, and we've had a couple people who told us, hey, I tried to ask Alexa to search for Beyond Sunday and she found the wrong one.
Maybe I think if you mumble a little bit, you'll get some song by Beyonce,
right? So watch out for that. But we hope that you'll rate and review us. It does help us out. And for sure, let us know what you think about this episode or any of our episodes. You can reach us on our Facebook page at Beyond Sunday Podcast.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.